Mr. Sloan, whenever you're ready.
May it please the court, I'm Clifford Sloan for Appellant Rosetta Stone. This case is about Google's sale and auction of Rosetta Stone's trademarks without Rosetta Stone's authorization to bidders selected by Google for the right to use Rosetta Stone trademarks on Google. And this is a very big problem for Rosetta Stone because again and again, Google has sold and continues to sell the right to use the Rosetta Stone trademarks to counterfeiters who falsely use those trademarks to offer purported Rosetta Stone software for a fraction of the price of genuine Rosetta Stone software and who sell purported Rosetta Stone software that is shoddy, inferior, and malfunctioning. This case is also about summary judgment. We respectfully submit that the district court repeatedly resolved genuine issues of material fact that should go to a jury. And at critical junctures, the district court also relied on erroneous legal interpretations. I'd like to start with contributory trademark infringement, which we submit vividly illustrates the recurrent problem of resolving genuine issues of material fact. Under the Supreme Court's well-established standard for contributory infringement, contributory infringement lies if there is intentional inducement or continued supply to a known infringer. That's the Inwood Labs case. And I'd like to focus on the second prong, continued supply to a known infringer, because we think there are examples and categories of evidence that clearly at least raise a genuine issue of material fact about continued supply to a known infringer. I refer the court to tab 33, exhibit C. And in that exhibit, it sets forth a pattern that happens again and again, which is that Rosetta Stone notifies Google of a counterfeiter using Rosetta Stone's trademarks on Google and asks for it to be taken down. Google takes it down. And then Rosetta Stone discovers Google again has sold a sponsored link to the same counterfeiter, the same website, and frequently that happens repeatedly. Let me give the court a concrete example, which is GameSoftMall.com, and this is on page 1415 of the joint appendix. Rosetta Stone notified Google it was in a counterfeiter. Google took it down. The next day, Rosetta Stone sees that Google again sold a sponsored link to GameSoftMall.com. And remember that every sponsored link can show up on thousands of Google pages. 2 days later, Google takes it down in response to the second notice. 2 days later, Rosetta Stone notices again Google has sold a sponsored link to the same counterfeiter, the same website. And again, let me just give the court some other examples, which are in Exhibit C, and this pattern recurs.
Do you have the pages available in the JA?
Yes, these are pages 1409 to page 1421. And the specific GameSoftMall.com examples on page 1415. But these other examples, which I'll just mention, will all be found in a spreadsheet, in a chart that's on pages 1409 to 1421. ILearnLatin.com, ShopScene.com, HotTopPro.com, JustDVDMalls.com, AuctionOfDVD.com, VIPRosettaStone.com, TopRosettaStone.com, CheaperRosettaStone.com, and it goes on. All of those are counterfeiters and Rosetta Stone tells Google, Google takes it down, and then Google again sells the sponsored link. That's continued supply to a known infringer. And there are other examples of other categories of evidence as well. One that the district court mentioned, but we submit failed to properly credit, is that over a 90-day period, Google sold 110 sponsored links to a single counterfeiter. Now, some of those links fall into this pattern I was just referring to of the same website. Some of them were different websites, but they were all registered, publicly available, easily accessible information to the same email address. And, of course, the Supreme Court standard for a known infringer is actual knowledge and constructive knowledge. The language the Supreme Court uses in Inwood Labs is if the supplier knows or has reason to know that the recipient is engaging in trademark infringement. And clearly, at the very least, there's a genuine issue of material fact about constructive knowledge. But let me give the court a third example, which we think, again, on contributory infringement, raises a genuine issue of material fact. Frequently, Rosetta Stone would notify Google of a counterfeiter, and it would take Google as much as a week, maybe more, to take it down. And this is specified, I would refer the court to page 627 of the joint appendix. This is paragraph 7 of the declaration of Jason Calhoun of Rosetta Stone. And he details that it sometimes takes a week or more. And let me give the court, again, a concrete example, and these are at pages 1410 to 1411 of the joint appendix. LanguageSoftLocker.com, a counterfeiter, between February 11th and February 19th of 2010, every single day, Rosetta Stone notified Google, this is a counterfeiter, take it down, beginning on February 11th. It wasn't until February 19th when Google took it down. Again, compare on thousands of Google pages, and so again, that's continued supply to a known infringer. By the way, just to illustrate the volume of pages, when I was mentioning the second category, the counterfeiter with 110 sponsored links, the record establishes that that appeared on 356,000 Google pages. So we're talking about a massive scale every time there's a sponsored link. That's contributory trademark infringement. Now let's turn to direct trademark infringement, where we submit there also are genuine issues of material fact. Now, first of all, it's undisputed that Rosetta Stone satisfies all of the elements of direct infringement with the lone exception of a dispute about likelihood of confusion. And under this court's well-established framework for evaluating likelihood of confusion, the court has identified 9 factors that are relevant. And it's undisputed that 6 of the factors favor Rosetta Stone. We believe strongly favor Rosetta Stone. The strength of the mark, which in cases like Pizzeria Uno, this court has said is the paramount consideration. The 4 similarity factors, marks, goods, facilities, and advertising. And the quality of the product, which relates to cheap knockoffs, directly applicable here. Now, the district court, after reciting the 9-factor test, entirely failed to consider, in the opinion, the 6 factors strongly favoring Rosetta Stone, the 6 factors that's undisputed favor Rosetta Stone. Instead, the district court explicitly said that it was focusing only on the 3 disputed factors. It said it was going to balance the 3 disputed factors. Now, we submit that was a fundamental error not to take into account the 6 factors favoring Rosetta Stone, which are not in dispute. The district court didn't address it at all. Now, Google says that, in fact, this court should explicitly say that those 6 factors aren't relevant for Google-sponsored links. This court should throw out the window 6 of the 9 factors when you're talking about a category Google calls online ad text. And it's one of a series of places where Google is asking for a special carve-out and special rules from the generally applicable trademark consideration. We would submit there's no basis in the Lanham Act and no basis in this court's precedent, either for ignoring 6 of the 9 factors the way the district court's opinion does, or for throwing them out the window the way Google advocates. And this court has said that those 6 factors, the 9-factor test, it's not a rigid formula, but this court repeatedly has emphasized that the 9 factors are very valuable in flushing out all of the relevant issues to make sure there's a rigorous analysis, and that should apply here. Now, on the 3 factors that the district court did consider, as to each of them, there's a disputed issue of material fact. The 3 issues are intent, actual confusion, and the sophistication of the consuming public. On intent, it's very clear in the record that in 2004, when Google first began its unauthorized sale and auction of other companies' trademarks, it did user studies. And it concluded that it would be very confusing for users if it allowed trademarks in ad text. The language of Google's conclusion was the likelihood of confusion remains high. This is at page 4366 of the joint appendix. We're talking about likelihood of confusion. Their conclusion was the likelihood of confusion remains high. In 2009, when Google reversed course and decided to allow the use of trademarks in ad tests. It didn't conduct any new user studies. Its corporate knowledge remained, the likelihood of confusion remains high.
But let me ask you a question, if I could, Mr. Sloan, on the contributory infringement claim. Does the strength of your claim depend on the whether the advertisers are selling counterfeit or are selling counterfeit software? In other words, do you still have a claim if it's simply the use of the mark in the text, or is it the fact solely that these advertisers are using it in the context of a counterfeit product?
Thank you, Your Honor. It's a very important point, because the way Google has argued it in this court and below is that this court should cut up the different uses, that there's the counterfeiters' use, that there's the use by competitors, that there's the use by resellers, and consider them all in isolation. And I'd like to make a few points on that. The first point is that it's clear under this court's cases that you don't cut up the uses when there's a claim of trademark infringement. In the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals case, this court said you don't look at a fragment of the use. You look at the use in its entirety. The way the 11th Circuit put it in the Johnson & Johnson case is you consider the whole face. You don't consider the ears separate from the eye, separate from the nose, separate from the mouth. And so with regard to that, the fact that counterfeiters are a prominent and regular feature, as the record reveals, of Google's sponsored links with regard to Rosetta Stone itself establishes a trademark infringement, or at least a tribal issue for trademark infringement, with regard to the whole page. Now, secondly, Your Honor, focusing on the competitors and the resellers, if one was to, for the sake of analysis, put aside the counterfeiters, then one has to look at the statutory standards and at the record in the case.
I understand you saying you don't need the others.
No.
But do you have the others?
Yes, I do, Your Honor. And so the evidence on the others, let me point to two categories of evidence on the others, which is that, first of all, Google's own internal studies, as I was just saying, where Google's conclusion is the likelihood of confusion remains high. Google was not testing counterfeiters there. That conclusion had nothing to do with counterfeiters. And in addition to that user study, there are other user studies which are in the record where Google says that users are fundamentally confused by sponsored links, a confusing term that Google coined and which it has abandoned just since this case has been on appeal and now uses the more straightforward term ads. But Google's own studies, without having nothing to do with counterfeiters, establish confusion from its sponsored links. In addition to that, Rosetta Stone has submitted an expert study which shows a confusion level of 17%, well above this court's threshold as explained in the Sara Lee case. And that expert study that Rosetta Stone has offered has nothing to do with counterfeiters either. That 17% is well above the threshold, and it doesn't involve counterfeiters. Now, I will say on the subject of the expert study, because there's been discussion and debate about that study, the district court said it doesn't count for an erroneous legal reason. The district court said it doesn't count because the question that the expert asked was whether Rosetta Stone endorsed the websites in question, the sponsored links in question. And the district court said, and I quote, that's a non-issue. Well, of course, this court has said again and again that a core Lanham Act issue, a core Lanham Act question, is confusion about the source or sponsorship of goods. And endorsement is an aspect of sponsorship. Now, I would just mention that Google mounts a series of methodological attacks on the expert study and says that the expert study shouldn't count for that reason. But those are factual issues that can be fought out in front of a jury. And indeed, Google raised all of those objections in a motion to exclude the expert study. The district court denied that, allowed it in, and then refused to credit it only because of that erroneous legal conclusion. And so, Your Honor, getting back to your point, we do think that there is evidence without regard to counterfeiters in terms of both the Google study and our own expert study.
To what extent are your infringement claims tied to the auctioning as opposed to the placement in the sponsored link ad? I mean, how much of your claim is relying on the fact of the auctioning?
Well, Your Honor, as it comes to this court, they're integrally related, and that's how Google has structured it. It has the auction, it sells it, and then it urges the advertisers. The current state of affairs is it urges the advertisers to use the terms that it has bought in the ads, and especially since Google has started doing that, there's been a huge spike in the counterfeiters. But as it comes to the court, the way Google presents it to its advertisers, those are integrally related.
You're saying we don't dissect the two together. It's a cohesive unit as far as the infringement.
That's
alleged.
Exactly right, Your Honor. I see that I'm almost out of time. I just wanted to mention, as we discussed in the brief, there's also the vicarious liability claim, the dilution claim, and the unjust enrichment. I'm happy to answer any questions from the court if there are on those claims.
Well, I had a question on the vicarious. You were citing the Perfect 10 case as the standard?
Yes.
Was there a reason why you weren't considering the copyright standard that we have used in the Fourth Circuit and found that less desirable for application or less appropriate?
Well, Your Honor, and the district court applied the Perfect 10 standard. And, you know, there have been questions about whether the trademark standard and the copyright standard are coextensive with secondary liability. And the Supreme Court has a footnote in an opinion where it says that the trademark standard is narrower than the copyright standard in some circumstances. So we tried to focus on the trademark standard. And with that Perfect 10 standard of joint control, we submit that there, too, there is clearly a disputed factual issue about the question of joint control. I see that I'm out of time. If I could just conclude with one sentence, Your Honor, I just wanted to just say that we recognize that Google has offered various justifications for its business practices regarding sponsored links in general and the Rosetta Stone trademarks in particular. And we submit that those are exactly the kinds of propositions that should be considered in the crucible of litigation before a properly instructed jury. We are not asking for summary judgment on Rosetta Stone's behalf. All we are asking is that this litigation be allowed to proceed in an orderly fashion and that the many disputed issues of fact be submitted to a finder of fact. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, Ms. Caruso. Ms. Caruso, I'm going to want you to incorporate within your argument a response to his statement that he opened with, that there is specific evidence that would preclude summary judgment on the contributory infringement. Actually, you don't have to go to that initially, but incorporate that into your argument.
Yes, Your Honor, I will. I'd like to start, though, with Judge Keenan's fine question about what it is that Rosetta Stone is really complaining about here, because it's clear from Mr. Sloan's answers that it's not only counterfeiting, it's everything. Rosetta Stone wants to be the only ad that shows up when any consumer enters a search query that includes Rosetta Stone's name. If that search query is for best price on Rosetta Stone, coupons for Rosetta Stone, reviews of Rosetta Stone, alternatives to Rosetta Stone, it doesn't matter to them. They say no one should be permitted to have their advertising displayed there other than Rosetta Stone. And that is a stunning extension of the Lanham Act that they're seeking. Nowhere in the brick-and-mortar world, the print world, broadcast world, does that type of monopoly power inhere with a trademark. But Rosetta Stone here says that it does because it's on the internet and it's Google, and Google somehow should be responsible for policing the internet, guaranteeing that there are no counterfeits, that there is no infringement that ever occurs on the internet. And that's, no court has ever held that about an internet site.
Why don't you address the argument that when Rosetta Stone notified Google about these counterfeiters posting fictitious ads on the website, that Google took them down but didn't put them back up, took them down and put them back up, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes, Your Honor. The record shows that Google, in fact, did respond to everything that Rosetta Stone raised. And Google's intention always is to get the counterfeit ads down permanently. They have a number of policies in place to do that. Unfortunately, with Rosetta Stone sought special treatment, really. And instead of filling out the online form for complaints, which when Google processes, creates notations in its systems that will do searches and block those infringers, Rosetta Stone took side channels and just said, get these down right away. And they went to someone other than the group they should have gone to, and those people could take them down, but they couldn't affect those changes to Google's system. So as soon as Google had that information in its system, it absolutely took it down. It permanently disabled those accounts because it is not in Google's interest at all to have counterfeit ads running. In the five instances of confusion that are in this record, and I want to be clear here that there are only five instances in which Rosetta Stone has identified anyone who has purchased a counterfeit product by virtue of clicking on one of these links. And that's important because that is a de minimis number under this court's holding in George. I mean, it's just clearly de minimis. The opportunities for confusion, there's nearly 125 million ads that were displayed that we're talking about here, and five instances, the percentage of that is 0.00004%. I think I got all those zeros in there. Less than half of 0.01%. So in terms of contributory infringement, the predicate for contributory infringement is, of course, underlying primary infringement. And that can't be established until there's proof that those websites were actually offering counterfeit product. Because if it wasn't counterfeit product, if it was resale product, if it was liquidated stock, then that's a referential use. It's a fair use. But Rosetta Stone has information, has evidence.
But the trial court didn't rely on fair use.
The trial court did talk about referential use.
But it wasn't talking about fair use, was it?
Yeah, I didn't mean to conflate classic fair use with referential use. So referential use is what those ads would be if they're not counterfeit. And there's evidence that only four of those websites were offering counterfeit. Rosetta Stone's enforcement manager, the person that they charge with pursuing counterfeits for their company, said the only way that they can know if something is really counterfeit is to physically look at it.
What if it's a known counterfeit whore? I mean, that seems to be what Judge Hamilton's question was. Once you know that a particular individual company is submitting counterfeit ads, why did you not eliminate those people from any further activity?
Your Honor, two things about that, and I want to separate them. One is Google's policy, which is absolutely to take those down and disable them. There's no leeway on that. That's absolutely the policy, and unfortunately, some slip through here. Aside from the policy, there's the legal liability question, and that legal liability can only arise with proof that those are actually selling counterfeit products. And what we don't have in the record here is proof that they were actually selling counterfeit products. Unlike in the Tiffany versus eBay case, where Tiffany had a buying program, they had proof that there were counterfeit products because they purchased products from those websites. They verified that they were counterfeit products and contacted eBay about them. By the way, in eBay, the number of times that they contacted eBay with specific information about the counterfeiters was many more times, 200 and...
You're saying at the summary judgment stage they're required to meet that level of proof?
Yes, Your Honor, because what they need to have at the summary judgment stage is proof from which a reasonable trier of fact can conclude that these were counterfeit. And counterfeit cannot be concluded, as Rosetta Stone admitted, without this testimony that the products have been purchased and looked at, inspected, and confirmed to be counterfeit. And that is missing
here. What exactly are you saying, that if they notified you that they suspected a counterfeiter had posted something on this website, you took it down without any proof at all just because they said that?
Yes, Your Honor. That was Google's policy to do that.
And then you put it back up?
We didn't put it back up.
That's what Mr. Sloan said.
Unfortunately, the counterfeiters take measures to evade our systems, and they resubmitted, and it did appear in these instances. But again, there's a distinction between Google trying to always have them down, no matter, you know, sort of what the background is there. Google doesn't require, in order to take things down, proof. But for purposes of legal liability, there does need to be proof of actual counterfeiting in order to hold Google liable.
Well, answer this to me. I understand what you're saying, but basically you're saying is that Rosetta Stone had to prove to you that they were counterfeiters. But you acted on what they sent you without any inquiry at all. You took these things down. And what is a little bit puzzling is if you took them down based on their assertion, but then you put them back up, and then they told you again that they were counterfeit. You took them down again, but then you put them back up. I don't quite understand your premise. You're saying that you didn't have any proof that they were counterfeiters, but yet you acted on what Rosetta Stone told you without any proof. Is that correct?
Google went and looked at the site and saw could be a counterfeiter, yes, and then they took it down. And because Google goes...
Well, if you concluded that, why would you continually put them back up?
Because of this human error on these few sites. And, Your Honor, there are a number of these which there was not this problem. The system worked as it should have. As soon as Google was notified of this, through the right department, it turned off checked that button in the system so that counterfeiter couldn't reappear. And what you have in a lot of these instances are counterfeiters coming up with new website names, new registration names, and what Rosetta Stone has said is, well, you, Google, should have figured it out. You should have not only just taken it down, but you should have gone out and done independent investigation beyond anything that your systems have and figured out who was the person, not just the account number or the name, who was the person who was doing this and made sure that that person never again ran an ad on Google. And that level of investigation and responsibility for what's on the Internet.
You're saying that was Rosetta Stone's problem, that they should have done that.
Exactly, Your Honor. And that's what all courts who considered this type of responsibility for any type of marketplace have considered. But notably here, Google is not a marketplace. It's not like a swap. It's not operating a swap shop.
Okay, but Rosetta Stone saying more, it's not just relying on the counterfeiters, as I understood Mr. Sloan. It's saying that these other third-party advertisers, competitors, can be infringing and Google can be contributing to that infringement by their using the Rosetta Stone mark to cause likelihood of confusion in the product purchase. So
yes.
I understand your counterfeiter argument,
right,
but I don't think you've answered their other argument yet on that.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would like to respond to that argument. Rosetta Stone's proof of that argument, there were two points, the Google user studies and the expert study. So let me talk about both of those. The expert study, Rosetta Stone seems to have the notion that because they have an expert study, summary judgment must fail. In fact, this court has, on numerous occasions, like other circuit courts, affirmed summary judgment notwithstanding an expert study by the plaintiff. And most notably in the First Care of Maryland case, in which the court affirmed summary judgment to the defendant, notwithstanding the expert study of the plaintiff, and pointed out that the plaintiff's categorization of the evidence was incorrect in that study. And if you went to the study and looked at the study and took away those respondents who were counted as confused by the plaintiff because they said there was a relationship between the two parties, the court said, then your confusion rate drops to 2% because there, in fact, is a relationship between the two parties. And the Van Leer study is exactly the same thing. You heard from Mr. Sloan that that study was not about counterfeiting. It was about referential use. It was about Amazon.com saying, we sell Rosetta Stone. You can buy it from us. And Amazon.com is Rosetta Stone's, an authorized distributor of Rosetta Stone products. In Rosetta Stone's SEC filings, they refer to Amazon.com as a select retailer who offers their products. So for consumers to have said, we think there's a relationship between Amazon.com and Rosetta Stone, they were right. To count them as confused is erroneous.
But Dr. Van Leer's report wasn't only limited to authorized retailers, was it?
Your Honor, that is correct. But if you just look at the Amazon one and the Coupon Cactus, which was a affiliate of Rosetta Stone, which Rosetta Stone paid to send traffic to its site, and had a contract with it at the time of that ad that said it could use its trademark in advertising. If those are excluded, because in fact there was that relationship with Rosetta Stone, then your net confusion, and this is in Dr. Blair's report, drops to negative 3%.
But aren't you talking, I guess what I'm getting at is, aren't you talking about the weight of the evidence of Dr. Van Leer's report rather than the fact that it has no probative value?
No, Your Honor. This is about what the evidence of Dr. Van Leer's report shows. Just like the court in First Fair of Maryland said, let's look at what the evidence of this expert actually shows. This is what it actually shows when you consider the undisputed record here. And Dr. Van Leer just mistakenly counted as confused people who were not confused because there was this relationship.
But he also counted people who were confused, didn't he?
Well, given Mr. Sloan's representation that the survey was not about counterfeiting, so if all of the advertisements were for actual Rosetta Stone products, what's shown on the record is that people think there is an endorsement by Rosetta Stone of Rosetta Stone's own products. And to impose liability for a reseller saying that it's selling a company's products, and then the company steps back and says, no, we don't want you to say that because consumers can get a better price from you. We want them to pay more for us. So that's confusing. We're going to assert our trademark rights and say no one can do that. It's really astonishing here because what we're talking about are these referential uses that Rosetta Stone wants to stop. They don't want consumers to have access, to be able to do comparison price shopping and look for information about Rosetta Stone reviews, which Rosetta Stone's own internal employees recognize is the way that people buy Rosetta Stone, by doing research on the internet and looking at other websites for this information.
Can I get you and your pals to go to trademark dilution and tell me what you believe fair use, but what role that issue plays in that claim?
Absolutely. Well, the statutory exception for dilution makes clear that, I'm just going to pull it up here and read it, that the following shall not be actionable as dilution under the subsection. Any fair use, including a nominative or descriptive fair use, and the nominative use, as distinguished from a classic fair use under the Trademark Act, is a referential use. It's someone using the name of the company to describe the products of the company. And that's what Rosetta Stone is complaining about here. That's what Google's policy, 2009 policy, allows. That policy was changed in 2009 when Google developed technology to look at the landing pages of the advertised websites and confirm that those websites were offering for sale the products whose trademark names they were using or were review sites about those. As opposed to, for example, what was tested in the 2004 studies that Mr. Sloan referred to, which were people just using trademarks to draw attention even though they weren't offering those products, even though their website was maybe a competitor that didn't identify themselves as a competitor, or it had nothing to do with it. So you had people bidding on Gucci sunglasses, but they offered other kinds of sunglasses or other accessories entirely. So those studies too, just as Mr. Sloan said, those studies weren't about counterfeiting. They have no relevance to counterfeiting. They also weren't about referential use. They have no application to referential use, which is what Rosetta Stone
is. Are you saying
about
the court properly applied the use requirement of FIDRA in this case?
Yes, Your Honor.
The problem that I have with this case is I hear your arguments. Listening to your arguments today, it seems to me that the trial court made a lot of errors of law here in terms of failing to balance the factors, in failing to, in confusing certain issues with regard to dilution, certainly in its assessment with the infringement on the functionality doctrine. There are just a lot of legal errors in this case. And what I'm hearing you say is that they don't make any difference because the evidence isn't there. Is that a fair characterization? You admit that the trial court did go off the rails. I know it's hard for you to do that, but you're saying it just doesn't make a difference evidentiary-wise.
Your Honor, I am saying that the trial court, there is ample evidence or lack of evidence in the record to affirm the trial court's decision granting Google summary judgment.
While we're on the dilution issue, is it your position that Rosetta Stone has to show that you use the famous mark as a trademark or source identifier?
It's our position that Rosetta Stone has to show that that Google was directly the one using the mark in a way that consumers thought, and that hasn't been done either.
But not as a trademark or source identifier.
That's not a necessary limitation. But here, Google did not use the mark in a way that users saw it. That was third parties, and there's not a secondary dilution claim at issue in this case. So in closing, I just want to point out that, again, what Rosetta Stone is asking for is, they made very clear, because a couple of counterfeits have slipped through, even though the totality of the counterfeiting evidence is extraordinarily de minimis here, they want Google to be banned from offering to consumers any relevant advertising when consumers do a query for rosettastone.com.
Let me ask you this question. It may not have anything to do with the facts, but is Rosetta Stone still using Google?
Yes, Your Honor. They are. They continue to advertise on it. They've advertised on it from 2002 and continue to do so.
Thank you.
I think we understand your argument.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Sloan, you have some time reserved.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I would submit to Your Honors that my colleague's submission illustrates that there are disputed factual issues, that summary judgment did not appropriately lie on this record, and that this should go to a jury. And I'd like to respond to a number of the specific points and perhaps also address the legal issue that came up with dilution. First, I'd like to pick up on Judge Hamilton's question, though, about Rosetta Stone continuing to use Google. And in a way, it illustrates one of the very big problems here. Rosetta Stone has to, as a matter of self-defense, because if Rosetta Stone doesn't, it's going to be all the counterfeiters without the Rosetta Stone link up there, and it's going to be all the other infringers.
Well, so, there are other search engines out there, aren't they?
There are, but it's very clear in this record, Google is responsible for 70% of the searches in the United States, and 80% of the searches worldwide. So it's not a situation where there are a bunch of other search engines and you can just do those and ignore Google. And that's part of the reason that the harm is so profound here, Your Honor, because of Google's dominant role. That's just the reality of the situation. It's in the complaint and it's undisputed in the record. Now, one point that I just want to clarify, because I just want to make sure there's no misunderstanding from Ms. Caruso's submission. When I was talking about GameSoftMall.com and the various websites that I named in my first category, That is the same counterfeiter at the same website being taken down and put back up. It doesn't require any investigation by Google or anything like that. I just want to be very clear. There are other ones where it's information that's readily available to Google, which we think there's a genuine issue about constructive knowledge. But I'm talking here about actual knowledge, the same counterfeiter, the same website laid out in Rosetta Stone's notice, zero investigation that's necessary from Google. Now, secondly, I want to mention the Tiffany versus eBay case, which my colleague raised, in which they focus on heavily in their brief. And there are three very important distinctions from the eBay case, which strongly support our argument that this case should go to a jury. First, the Tiffany versus eBay case was not a summary judgment case. It was based on findings of fact after a week-long bench trial. That's exactly what should happen here, and that's the problem with the district court's decision. Second, the Second Circuit emphasized that in that case there was no evidence that eBay continued to provide to a known infringer, that there was no evidence that once a counterfeiter had been identified, that eBay continued to supply a service to it. It's exactly the opposite here, as we've gone through. Third, in terms of their various responses, eBay, which has far fewer revenues than Google, it says in the Second Circuit opinion, employs 4,000 people to deal with trust and safety issues and 200 people to deal exclusively with counterfeiting. The evidence in this record on Google's submission is that Google has less than 4 full-time employees, 150 hours. Again, these are all facts the jury can consider, and they strongly illustrate why this case should go to a jury.
Let me ask you this. I think your opponent, Ms. Caruso, said that Rosetta Stone said they couldn't tell whether an article was counterfeit or not without seeing it and examining it. Is that correct?
Your Honor, in terms of a determination on the actual software, that's correct. But Rosetta Stone can tell that a site is counterfeit because what a lot of these counterfeit sites do is they mimic the Rosetta Stone site, and they use the Rosetta Stone trademark. So all you have to do is look at the site, and you can tell they're trying to masquerade as Rosetta Stone. In fact, this is in the record. It's tab 62. There's actually a DVD that shows what one of those counterfeiters' websites. So it's not the only way of determining that it's counterfeit. So that's an answer to Your Honor's question. But the
second part of my question was going to be, or is it a case where Rosetta Stone didn't want the potential purchaser buying it from the so-called counterfeiter as opposed to buying it from them at a higher price, perhaps? Is that a plausible explanation?
No, Your Honor, it's not. And let me explain something. First of all, the counterfeit goods are, as I mentioned, shoddy and inferior.
We're not talking about counterfeit goods.
I'm sorry if I misunderstood, Your Honor.
Legitimate goods.
Oh, okay.
That the advertiser wants to sell to the public as opposed to having the public go to Rosetta Stone to buy that at maybe a higher price.
I see, Your Honor. I apologize for misunderstanding
the
question. The question would be the statutory standard of likelihood of confusion for infringement or dilution for the dilution statute. And let me give some examples, and there's evidence in the record of this. There are certain benefits that one also gets directly from buying from Rosetta Stone, such as a six-month guarantee, and you don't get that anywhere else. And there's evidence in the record that people are complaining to Rosetta Stone, and they're going up to them at the kiosk, and they're saying, I got this from someplace else, and you're not giving me a six-month guarantee on it. And so there is confusion about other terms and conditions, Your Honor. And so that's ultimately the question, is whether there's a likelihood of confusion for infringement. Google tries to make it sound like, well, if it's a competitor, it's automatically okay. And, of course, this court sees lots of cases from competitors. The Sara Lee case, this court found infringement from a competitor. The question is whether it's confusing. And Google's own studies, as well as Rosetta Stone's studies, show that it is confusing. So, Your Honor, rather than it being just a sort of resentment about price or something like that, the real issue here is whether there's likelihood of confusion.
Well, I don't see the analogy you're drawing, just because they didn't offer the guarantee doesn't mean that it's a counterfeit product.
Oh, no, no, Your Honor, I wasn't saying it was a counterfeit product. I was trying to follow your question, which, as I understand it, is leave counterfeiting to the side and see if there's confusion from what, you know, say, resellers are doing, if that's what you were asking. Or was Your Honor, were you asking about is competitors selling an entirely different product? Is that what you were...
Well,
perhaps I misunderstood.
The product could be a little different in using your analogy that they didn't offer the guarantee, but that doesn't mean it's a counterfeit product.
No, no, and I didn't mean
just
to
like
suggest
going
it.
To buy an automobile. Some dealerships will say, we'll give you a free oil change for the first 50,000 miles. Other dealers don't. But that doesn't mean that they're selling a counterfeit automobile.
No, but just to follow my analogy, if Ford Motor Company is offering a guarantee under certain terms and conditions, and you only get that directly from Ford, and then somebody else has an ad that makes it sound like you get the same guarantee from them, that would be confusing.
Well, I agree.
Okay, and what we're saying, and there's a factual question in this case, is that what's going on? But that's our view in response to the question that Your Honor posits, and that's the reason for confusion. Ms. Caruso also talked about the Google's policies. Of course, what's before the court is Google's practices, which are frequently very much at odds with their policy.
Ms. Sloan, you're out of time.
Okay.
If you just wrap it up, I won't cut you off immediately.
Okay. Well, thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate that. And let me just close with one point about the individual consumers, which Ms. Caruso mentioned. And she said that those were de minimis. And I would just like to make two points about that. And she relied on this court's opinion in George and Company, as did the district court. This case is very different from George and Company, because in George and Company, when this court said that the testimony of the four consumers was de minimis, there was no other evidence of actual confusion in the record. That was it. And in this case, as we've gone through, we think there's plenty of other evidence of actual confusion. And the testimony of these five sophisticated consumers who bought counterfeit software because they were confused by Google's sponsored links with Rosetta Stone trademarks has to be considered in the context of the overall quilt of evidence. And it corroborates and mutually reinforces the other evidence in the record. And the second point, and I'll make this my final point, Your Honor, is that Ms. Caruso's submission seemed to make it sound as though the only type of confusion or actionable confusion would be if somebody actually bought Rosetta Stone software for a counterfeiter. We think the testimony of the five individuals is powerful and revealing. But there's tremendous confusion just from the appearance on the pages, because the counterfeiters are offering the Rosetta Stone software for a fraction of the cost of genuine Rosetta Stone software. And that's leading to considerable confusion in the marketplace. And Rosetta Stone is hearing that from people. Hey, we saw on the web it was only for, you know, a third of the cost that you're offering it for. And in this court's decision in Georgia Pacific, in Polo Fashions, in other cases, this court has made clear it's not only the buyer's confusion that's at issue. If there's confusion in the market, if there's confusion from other constituencies, that counts.
You need to wrap it up.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. Let's come down and recounsel, and then we'll go into the next case.